My first guest knows more than most about the reality of piracy and has written a gripping and moving account of his 977 days of captivity by Somali pirates who demanded $10 million for his release. Michael Scott Moore, in 2012, you sent out with a grant from the Pulitzer Center of Crisis Reporting to find and talk to pirates and walk straight into a disaster and found yourself this valuable commodity.
A hostage, yeah.
A hostage. So the people that were taking you into Somalia and supposedly showing you around proved to be duplicitous.
Yeah, the clan itself, the clan as a whole, I think there was within the clan there was some betrayal. So I went as a guest of the president of Galmudug, which is the central Somali region that we were visiting, and we had a fixer there who belonged to the Sa'ad clan. And we were guests. I went with a partner, another journalist, and we were guests of those guys.
And in a way, I mean, I think that there's so much richness in this book, and you explore the whole idea about Somali piracy and where it started, and you have sympathy in a way about the origins of it.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And tell me about that conflict in your head about what these guys were doing to you and what the origins were.
Right. Well, the origins lie in illegal fishing, so that's true. After the government collapsed, there was no navy to defend the coastline in the 90s, and so you had illegal fishing ships coming in to Somali waters and stealing the fish. And Somalis got used to sending out little boats with gunmen in them and asking for a fee, basically a license fee to fish. And as long as that was going on, which was, you know, kind of the fishing boats would sit idle for 24 hours or so. So you can see how the beginnings of hijacking were there, but nobody noticed it because it was just a way of doing business in a very chaotic part of the world. Once we heard about it, in other words, once those gangs got organized and started to capture cargo ships, I would argue it was no longer about really defending the coastline.
But you walked into such danger, and you talk in the book yourself about journalistic hubris. Mm-hmm. I mean, you thought you'd be okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in the end, you came upon some really vicious, violent people.
Yeah.
You were a very valuable, you know, your $10 million.
Yeah, 20. They,
20
the first
originally,
demand was
first
20 million.
Demand.
Yeah.
But there were others there. And you know, you became very friendly with a Mauritian called Raleigh.
Yeah, so he was from the Seychelles. He and his friend were
You saw him tortured.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he is a sweet guy. And but in the middle of that first year, they brought him into the forest, brought me out there too, and they strung him up from a tree by his feet, by his ankles, and they beat him with a cane.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the worst days of my life.
Mm-hmm. For a lot, and you're very open about this, for a lot of the time, you were suicidal, and you actually thought of committing suicide, but in your family there was suicide because your father committed suicide.
My father committed
suicide.
Did
you worry that you were going to fall prey to some kind of familial...
Yeah, I mean, I thought the irony was that I deliberately pursued a life as a writer to avoid the sort of pressures that my father felt that probably led to his alcoholism and his suicide. And here I was in, I'd gotten myself into so much trouble that I was contemplating it myself. So that was something that gave me plenty to think about, let's put it that way.